For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey Nathan, you just got back from where?
From Austin, Texas.
Oh, it's got to be hot in the summer.
99 degrees, 90% humidity, and no breeze when we were shooting.
What were you driving?
I was driving the vehicle behind me, and if you guys can't see it, it's the 2022 Toyota Corolla Cross.
So we're going to call this the crossover episode of TFL. Talking cars because, we've got a bunch of crossovers that we're going to be talking about, and that includes the RAV4, the CR-V, the Rogue, the Mazda CX-5, of course, the Bronco Sport / Escape, the Tiguan, and the Forester. That's a lot, Nathan.
It is a lot, but think about it. Most automakers are now only making crossovers and trucks. I mean, that's the truth, especially the big ones.
Actually, it's TFL Talk. I'm sorry, Consumer Reports. You guys have been doing the talking cars longer than we have,
so
we kind of rebranded it to TFL Talk.
Do you want to start over?
No, we can keep going. It's fine, actually. I love listening to the Consumer Reports podcast, so yeah. Much love your way, guys. And if you're looking for a good podcast, listen to those guys. Get deep into the woods.
Yeah, after ours.
After ours. All right, so let's talk about your little trip to Texas. Tell me about this vehicle. Where does it fit into the Toyota lineup?
Okay, so right now, Toyota has, with this vehicle, one of the more extensive lineups when it comes to crossovers, and that's because you start with their base model, I would like to call it, which is their CHR. The CHR we've had before, and we'll talk about that in
that's
a minute.
It's kind of a European. It's small, and it doesn't quite fit.
It looks like a rally car, but it really isn't. It's front-wheel drive
only. Very stylish.
Very stylish on the outside. It's not what I would call a crossover because it does not come with all-wheel drive in the United States. In other markets, they have a variety of other powertrains. We only have one.
Yeah, I remember I saw that for the first time at the Geneva Auto Show before it came to America. And I had a sense that this was really kind of a crossover designed for European cities, right? Mm. So you could get it in a hybrid, so it's very fuel efficient.
Right.
And they were bringing it here because, of course, we love our crossovers.
Yeah, but there were a couple problems. What they did is they put a fantastic suspension system in this thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the handle's really good, but they put a rather anemic engine and a CVT in it, and the vehicle is far too slow.
Have you sat in the back?
I tried to.
Yeah, I know.
It's not very roomy in the back. There are a lot of flaws. The benefits are that it's a solid vehicle. It gets decent mileage and all that. But the CHR really didn't compete against vehicles from Honda and from the big three, really. So, well, sort of the big two, I'd say. So then there's this new one, the Toyota Corolla Cross. That goes just above the CHR. That's in terms of size, in terms of equipment, and I can't talk about pricing or driving impressions, but in terms of overall packaging, I can say that this vehicle goes a step above that one. And then right above this one is, of course, the RAV4.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a sec.
Oh, yeah, RAV4, one of the best-selling vehicles in its class, for a good reason.
The best-selling vehicle in America, dude.
Yeah, one of the best-selling, cars, not because trucks outsell cars.
Yeah, the Ford F-150. But anyway, let's talk about the Corolla Cross.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you a trivia question.
By all means.
And this will explain why it's called the Corolla Cross and not the, the ZR-V or whatever.
I think I know where this is going to.
What's the best-selling car in all of history?
Corolla.
Exactly. People think
50 million Corollas sold since it's 1967, I believe, is around the time it came out, around 1973 in the United States. And since then, there's been front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, turbocharged, supercharged, coupes, hatchbacks, wagons, but never a crossover.
Yeah, people think it's the Beetle, but it's really the Corolla. And that's why I think Toyota called it the Corolla Cross, because they're leveraging this really popular vehicle, this very, well-known name, to now be a crossover, which we all know Americans love.
Indeed, but there's more.
There's more.
Yeah, because what they did was they actually took a lot of Corolla and put it in this vehicle.
Really?
So the platform is shared. Well, actually, this is shared with, believe it or not, This is a Prius platform. It's the TNGAC platform that's been stretched and moved, but the interior is almost directly out of the Corolla. Most of the components in the front are the front end styling. If you look at the headlights, if you look at the taillights, they're very similar to the Corolla. They did a lot to make it look like a stretched Corolla. The wheelbase and everything else, very close to Corolla as well. So what they managed to do is they actually took a vehicle, and instead of just somebody throwing a name on it like a lot of the competitors do, they really did take a lot of the DNA out of the Corolla, including some of the running gear, and they put it in this vehicle.
So what's under the hood?
Okay, so you have a 2-liter four-cylinder engine. It's the only engine currently available. It puts out 169 horsepower and 150 pound-feet of torque. It's hooked up to a continuously variable transmission. But Roman.
Ouch.
Wait.
Ouch.
It's the Toyota CVT, which is better because it actually has a real first gear. And then it goes from second gear is basically when the CVT kicks in. But it makes a big difference with most vehicles in terms of performance. I'm not going to discuss this vehicle's performance, but in terms of other Toyotas, it is still one of the better CVTs out there if there's such a thing. So,
how about fuel economy?
I'll get to that in a second. Front wheel drive, all wheel drive. Those are the two options. With front wheel drive, you can get up to 32 mpg. I am allowed to say this. And with all wheel drive, 30 mpg combined. That, in terms of numbers, when you compare it against the competition, is nearly best in class. That's before you get to hybrids.
So what does it compete with?
A lot. So I think the main competitor would be the Honda HR-V, which is about to go through a major change. The Honda HR-V is, in some ways, one of the best-selling vehicles and one of the better-selling vehicles in the class, but there are a lot of other ones in this small class that it competes against, and that would include the Rogue Sport from Nissan, and then the Chevy Trax, the Ford Eco or Echo Sport, depending on which side of the bed you roll out of. Sorry, I can't.
Depending who you talk to at Ford.
I know. Who you talk to at Ford, it's crazy.
They all like, Echo Sport, Eco Sport.
It's been crazy. So
so basically, this kind of the small crossover.
Yeah, Jeep Renegade.
Yeah, one segment below the mid-size crossover mainstream vehicles like the RAV4.
Yeah. This is actually a subcompact category. And there are some slightly bigger and there are some slightly smaller. But overall, it sits in the sweet spot of that category. And with that, there are a couple interesting little tidbits about this vehicle that we're not going to get yet, but we might get very soon.
Like?
A hybrid. Mm. So if you're able to watch this, if you're watching this video and you see the image behind me, or if you look at any of the ones that are available in the United States, first thing you'll notice is that there's an interesting cut in the front bumper. And the reason that cut is there is because normally there are lights that go there. Ah, but that's for the overseas version of this vehicle, which is a hybrid.
I bet you we'll get a hybrid.
Yeah. Well,
if I was a betting
everybody
man,
at Toyota would, said stay tuned.
Yeah, I bet you if I was
next
a betting
year,
man, yeah, of course.
And that one will be very similar to the way the Toyota RAV4 hybrid, the regular hybrid, is set up. So there'll be a hybrid, a front-wheel drive version, and then the all-wheel drive one will be an electric motor powering the rear wheels.
Now, I got to see and sit inside this thing when I was in Toyota like 2 months ago.
In Austin, Dallas.
Outside of Plano.
Plano, that was it.
Yeah. And what struck me, Nathan, is just how big it is for a small vehicle. There's a lot of room in this thing.
That's what the big change is. And this is the thing that when you guys watch, we have two videos that are coming out, actually one that just hit and one that's about to hit. And you'll notice my big, large American booty is able to get behind myself, not with a ton of space. When I had the seat all the way back, I had enough leg room and plenty of headroom, but my feet were actually a little stuffed underneath. But I have really big feet to a certain extent. And so,
Nathan, are you bragging?
It's a long story about
leave that
my feet.
For your wife.
Yeah, I'm leaving it out of this one. So the point is that when you sit in the back of a regular Corolla, like the hatchback, it's really tight.
It is tight.
And the room in the back is not good. In fact, it's one of the lower ones in the class. This makes up for it. And one of the things I noticed when I was riding around on this is like, okay, you know, it's bigger, it's heavier than, you know, the little Corolla, so to speak, but not much. And I was thinking, you know, if I buy a front-wheel drive version of this, a base price, which I can't mention, but if I were to buy one of those, it makes more sense.
And let me just be clear why you can't mention it. There's an embargo.
Embargarino.
And we got an email from a dude this week who said, you know, that the manufacturers are using embargoes to kind of, to shape the story, basically. This is not the case in the automotive world. The reason they're doing these embargoes, for the most part, is because they want to give the journalists the chance to bring out their stories at the same time. So while Nathan can talk about, you know, all the features and the size, we can't talk about driving impressions. When is it?
Or pricing. September 9th, I believe. Yeah, September 9th. But what we do at TFL is we'll do a video which shows you everything that we can and goes over the numbers. And then the more detailed video comes out when the embargo drops. And that one talks about driving impressions, pricing, and then all the other features on top of that.
We kind of do a hands-on, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the first video is about.
And that one is actually up on TFL Now. Mm-hmm. And if you guys are confused, like I am, by all the TFL channels, don't worry. We got you covered.
Yes, indeed.
Go to TFL-studios.com, where we have all of our videos, all of our podcasts, all of our news in one place. And you can just go there, and you can see all the videos as we publish them. And then you don't have to go between the different channels and find these videos. So that one is, I think, the top video right now on TFL-studios.com.
And that is fabulous. It's funny. Some videos fly and some just don't. But let's go quickly on to the final tidbits about this vehicle.
Yeah, okay. Keep going.
According to Toyota, there'll be 29 accessories available at launch. It means special roof racks, a hitch. It can tow up to 1,500 pounds.
Let me interject here again.
Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, we kind of ran out of trucks to take up the iGauntlet. So Nathan and Andre have been doing a series of videos. We're all actually doing them called the Tike Ike, where we're taking these small crossovers up the iGauntlet. And you recently took a Kia up there.
That's right. And that video is available on TFL Car.
It's on TFL-Studios. It's there.
Oh, it's on TFL Studios. So look for it there.
Yeah, you'll find it.
And the cool thing about that is that we are doing something that a lot of Americans are not, which is we're actually evaluating a vehicle before we tow with it. And while we're towing with it, over 1 million trailers were sold last year during the major pandemic rush. And a lot of people went out and bought them, but a lot of those people did that with small crossovers and SUVs, and they've never towed before. So one of the parts of the series is showing how the car tows, and it's also some consumer information for those of you who have not had an opportunity to tow.
And let's face it, we run that car up the world's toughest towing test. We run it from 10,000 feet above sea level to almost 12,000 feet to the Eisenhower Tunnel and see how it performs, just like we do with the big boy trucks.
So it's like an 8% grade at one point?
8%. It's the steepest allowable grade in America.
Yeah.
Over 8 miles. Then we time the vehicle. We see how it does downhill. And while you were in Austin sweating, Andre actually was taking the ID4 up the Tike Ike. So he took the electric VW up the Tike Ike, and he almost got stranded.
Which, that in itself is worth watching when Andre loses it and his eyes bug out. I mean,
he was brave, dude, because we were trying to arrange test, or he was trying to arrange test, plus an iGauntlet. So we filled it up to its max, and the car said it was like a 280 miles of range.
Uh-huh.
And then we hooked it up to this trailer that we borrowed from our friends down the street called Colorado Teardrop.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not a big, it's a 1,500-pound trailer.
Yeah.
It's the same amount that this little guy can tow, right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, Andre, you think you can make it up to the top of the Ike and back to Boulder on one battery? He's like, I'm going to give it a try. And keep in mind, it's like 75 miles one way. So it would have been like 75 miles straight up a mountain and then, 75 miles down the mountain.
Right.
So when he got to the top of the Ike, he was at like 40%. And then I was like, okay, well, that's, I don't know if you're going to make it back. And then he was going to go to Silverthorn, where we have the Electrify America chargers at the Walmart.
Right.
They were all full, dude. They were all full. So he said, screw it, I'm going to drive back down, and he almost ran out of juice. Anyway, that video is coming up this weekend. It'll be up on, once again, TFL-Studios. You'll see it there, or TFL Car.
But what's an important thing to note here is that this vehicle, the Corolla Cross,
1,500, you said, yeah.
1,500. This vehicle will be, as long as Toyota sends it to us equipped with a hitch, will be going on the Ike Gauntlet, on the Tike Ike.
Yeah, we've been actually having an interesting time with that, because not only a lot of these vehicles don't have a hitch, right, but they, of course, don't have a way to brake the trailer if it does have brakes. Because you usually have a 4-pin connector. In order for the brakes to work, you have to have a 7-pin connector, and then you also have to have a way to tell the trailer, if it has brakes, when to brake. So it's a lot trickier with a truck than with a truck. With a truck, you just plug in a 7-pin.
You plug it in, and then you're able to hook up the way the brakes work. There is one other option, which is, of course, a surge brake thing, and that's a whole different thing where the brake,
And usually those are like boat trailers.
Yeah, usually they are boat trailers. But what we're going to do is hopefully maintain this series for a little bit and make sure that you guys get some good consumer information, because the whole point here is that towing a little tiny trailer with these things is awesome. You're getting much better mileage than you would with a big pickup, and you're able to put your family in there and go off.
What kind of mileage did you get with the Kia?
Well, it's in the video. Regular
mileage. I want to say it was like 7.5, 8.
But this is doing the hill. It was around 8 miles per gallon, if I recall. But that thing also flew up the hill. That turbo was really powerful. And when you look at the results, bear in mind that that's going up and down this major grade.
It was the Sportage, by the way.
It was the Sportage, which is about to be completely redesigned. So this was sort of the last hurrah for the old one. And this all-new one is coming out, I think, in the next few months. And we'll be hopefully getting one of those up there, too.
All right, so 28 accessories, among them being a tow hitch.
29, I believe. Okay. And, yeah, the hitch is one of them. And that hitch you can also put, you know, a bike rack on and all this other stuff, roof rack stuff, stuff for the interior. Another thing that Toyota did... They have, I believe, 22 Easter eggs throughout the vehicle.
God.
Yeah, I know. This is Jeep's fault. I blame Jeep entirely.
I blame you, Mark Allen.
Mark Allen's fault entirely.
The designer of Jeep, he put the little shoes. Remember that Rick Pei-Wei?
Yeah.
Rick Pei-Wei is like this... This legend among Jeepers, he's been wheeling forever.
He's a writer and
I think he was a four-wheeler or the editor of
four-wheeler. He's done almost every off-road magazine out there.
And his calling card was that he never wore shoes, he only wore sandals. And so he became good friends with Mark Allen. And then if you have a Jeep and you look in that little piece of plastic that's underneath the windshield on the passenger side, you'll see a little pair of sandals.
Yeah, flip-flops.
Basically in the plastic, right? Not real sandals, just, you know, little...
A little stamping.
Yeah, and that... is one of the Easter eggs, and then Jeep, of course, went crazy with it. Now everybody's doing it. It's like a thing.
Yeah, and if you look at a regular Jeep, like Tommy's Jeep that he just recently got, you'll find a dozen different little things with the little Jeep logo all over the place on that vehicle.
You know our Bronco? If you look in the gas cap, there's three. First generation, there were three different Broncos, right? There was the one that everybody thinks of, which is the kind of the crossover one.
Right.
Then there was the half cab, which was a pickup truck.
We had that one for a little while.
Yeah, and then there was a Roadster. People didn't know that actually Bronco made a topless vehicle. And so all three of those are in the little gas cap.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize.
Or above the little gas, a little hole where the gas is. You'll see it there. Anyway, so what? Pray tell. You know what Toyota does too? Hmm. In the latest 2022 Tacoma, in the headlights, on one side it says TRD, and the other side it says Pro, if you have the TRD Pro.
Which is really cool, but also something that, honestly, I think it's getting a little out of hand, but whatever. Remember, this is made for consumers, and this is really aimed towards a first car for someone, a first new car. So having that pride in ownership and then saying, oh, and look at these little Easter eggs.
So like there's a little payment check?
It's not that. Yeah. Once again, the next video, we'll tell you the pricing on these. But it's a sketch that they used for the actual outline of the vehicle, the silhouette of the vehicle that is imbued throughout everything that you're going to see in terms of all the PR media for this car. So in the vehicle itself, in door panels, hidden under the hood, near the windshield.
All right, let's do this. I'm gonna give you some of the top Easter eggs from the vehicles that we have owned or that I know of, and you tell me whether you love them or hate them.
Well, it's pretty simple. Okay.
All right, ready. TRX has an actual TRX dinosaur underneath the engine cover above the Hemi.
Yeah, you got to pull a little piece of plastic out. Yeah.
Love it or hate it?
I love it.
Okay. The Jeep Wrangler has a little flat fender Jeep.
Hate it.
Going up and over.
I hate it.
All right. What else is there? Those are the only two I could think of. TRX. Has all the technical specifications stamped into the armrest of the...
It's useless. I hate it. It's a cool idea, but I hate it.
Honda Civic Type R has a Formula One vehicle stamped into the, not the armrest, but the little cabin underneath the armrest.
Yeah, I hate that one too.
Okay, all right. Is there any you love?
No, just the one with TRX. I just like that one because it's funny.
Okay.
It makes me laugh. All the other ones, I here's my thing with that, and I really hate to put everybody down who's designing these things, 'cause it takes time. I think that they put a little bit too much effort into making things cutesy, and in my mind, it's like, well, maybe you could have done a little bit more to make this better or this better. When I see all of the, one Easter egg doesn't bother me. One little thing on the windshield or one little thing on the headlights, no big deal. But when they stamp the hell out of the car and they put them everywhere so you find them later on, I find that to be a little bit of a waste of resources.
Hey, guys, let us know in the comments below what you think of the Easter eggs. And I bet you I forgot a lot more. I'm kind of going through my memory of all the
Nearly every automaker does Easter eggs now, including BMW and stuff like that.
Yeah, so let us know which ones are your favorite and do you love them and hate
or go ahead and yell at me. I know you guys are like, oh, that's the best thing ever. Sorry, I just think it's a little waste of resources.
All right, so what were you saying is the Easter egg in this guy?
It's a little... it's a silhouette sort of sketch of what the original idea for this vehicle was.
Oh, okay.
Now, there are some important things to keep in mind in terms of its silhouette, by the way, and its overall design. And the picture that you guys see behind me, if you're watching the podcast, it doesn't really show it. Unfortunately, it's a white one. But if you look at the other colors, including the green one that we used in the videos, you can actually really see the fender flares. And they actually went through a lot of trouble to flare these fenders out to make it look more muscular. That also goes to these little plastic components they put in the fenders, which, of course, means off-roading. 8 inches of ground clearance, just over 8 inches of ground clearance. Approach and departure angles, not the best in business, but they are better than, way better than that CHR. The CHR has the worst approach angle of any vehicle that's ever been called a crossover, ever. In Colorado, it actually plowed my driveway. I didn't want it to plow my driveway, but it did when I brought it home. So this vehicle has a much better approach angle, and there is the fake armor, of course, which is sort of every vehicle in this class has it. So you look at the front and the rear, and you see these little things that look almost like they're metal. They're not. The rest of the vehicle, however, is fairly logically laid out, and there's not a lot of extra chintz on it, which I actually like for vehicles in this class. So many other ones look way too manly and aren't capable. This one, simple. Oh, I'll tell you about the all-wheel drive system in a minute.
All right, before you do that, let me do another love it or hate it, okay?
Yes, please.
This is a new trend that I've been noticing. So obviously for a long time, when you had like a truck, you could get a regular old truck tire or you can get like an all-terrain tire, right? There were two kinds of tires you could get for a truck. So for instance, you could get, you know, the typical work truck tire, which would last a long time, but looked like a regular tire. Or if you were going to off-road it, you could get like, well,
mud terrain or something.
Yeah, if you're a Bridgestone, it's a mud terrain or an all terrain. Yeah. If it's Toyo, it's an open country. If it's
BFGs.
A Wrangler, right. If it's a Wrangler, it's what are those things called?
Well, they're doing Nitos and
the Bronco now has a territory.
Yeah.
Territory because they got rid of the. It's a Wrangler actually. They got rid of the Wrangler.
The Grabbers.
Anyway, so there were all these like hard, very aggressive, big tread pattern. You know, very like looks like you could go up Everest with them. But
right.
Now there's this new trend. The first time I saw it was when we had that Ridgeline, and what Honda did on the latest Ridgeline is, of course, they made it look a little bit more off-roady, right? So they put new cladding on it. They also put dual exhaust on it, and one of the things they did was they created a tire that on the outside has a very off-roady pattern.
Is that Firestone?
I think it could be. I forget what it is.
Okay.
But it is. It could be a Firestone, but it's or it could be a Goodyear. Okay. Anyway, the tire has a very on-roady tread, but a very off-roady look to it from the outside. Right?
Yeah, that's because the side, there's chunky side components on the,
And I was talking to Honda and they were like, we're very happy with this tire because it gives you the comfort of the problem with those big mud terrains, of course, is that they're loud.
And they're bad for efficiency.
And they're bad for efficiency. So they were like, well, we got the look that we want and we've got the comfort that our customers want. And that's now I just noticed that BFG has introduced a very similar tire to that. So there's this trend of creating like these off-roady looking tires that really have on-roady driving characteristics.
Yeah, they do. And
love it or hate it.
That's a tough one. And then the reason why is because we drove another vehicle, you may have forgotten, that had that tire on there. We went to Las Vegas and we drove the Pirelli Scorpion tire. Remember that one?
Yeah, I remember the Scorpion.
And that one was one of the earlier versions of this tire.
Yeah, the Scorpions have been around for a long time. There's different versions of Scorpion.
Now,
now
they are aggressive enough to do light off-roading, and they're considered a light off-road tire. But if you look at the side bolster on them, it's, the sidewalls look chunky and like they're ready to do the car, but it's really
not.
And
there's a Scorpion on them.
Yeah, there's a Scorpion's really cool. Actually, that's one of the tires that would fit on my Mitsubishi, by the way. To me, that tire was okay because it could do light off-roading. I'm totally cool with that because they were honest about it. But some of these other tires, I think, are a little misleading. So I would say I hate it.
I do too. I'm always like, it's like, it's like fake hood scoops, right? Either be what you are, and I get that you get the fuel efficiency of an on-road tire, and
but the look.
But get one or the other. If you're going to have a hood scoop, make it functional. What? If you're going to have an all-terrain tire, make it functional.
I got to be honest with you. See, this is the one thing that I think that tire makers are doing. They have a lot of light duty off-road tires that are perfectly fine on the street. They might be a little bit louder, but they look cool. And I think that that's a good medium. Making a tire that is absolutely not capable off-road, it's just a street tire with, you know, with it looking like it's capable, might fool drivers, perhaps someone who buys it used.
Well, it fooled us with the Defender. I mean, if you watch that Defender video where Tommy, you know, we had these Goodyears on, so you can get off-road tires for the Defender, and there are these Goodyears that are basically, well, useless off-road because we blew two of them on a rock.
Well, the sidewalls are pathetic on those things. Right, and then the wheels were too big.
Yeah, you got 20-inch wheels, right, and then you put this off-roady tire on it that has maybe, what would you say that thing had, like 2 inches?
Two inches and change sidewall,
and you hit a rock with it, and it just blew out the entire side.
Yeah, there's usually, you know, 7-ply, 6-ply, 10-ply.
I get the fact that it's comfortable and fuel-efficient for on-road use, and, you know, but then if that one time you need it, if it's going to blow out, by the way, we weren't the only ones who blew it out. What's his name? Casey Nystrom also.
Yeah, he had a major blowout.
He did the same thing. He blew it out on that. So that is just, you know, what's the point, right? So you're going to get better fuel efficiency. But Nathan, we had to leave that Defender up on the trail.
I was there, and I remember laughing. I mean, I remember the whole situation.
Yeah, you remember. You know that we. I mean, there's nothing you can do.
No, you guys blew both tires, and then you were done.
And then getting it down, you know, luckily we had a friend who runs the local Land Rover dealership in Denver, and so he happened to have 4 wheels and tires off of a Defender that he kind of upgraded that he lent us, so we could actually drive up there, change it, and then drive down. But, you know, you're going to have to use like a recovery service like the YouTube channel, and that's not cheap, dude.
No, especially up at Redcombe where we were. That would have been a very expensive tow.
How long did you wait? You waited for like an hour for us to try to get this.
I waited and relaxed and laughed for an hour.
You did.
I saw Roman bring the thing up there, and I thought, oh, really? That's not a... And he knew it. You knew it, too. I mean, we've done enough off-roading when we knew it. But the hope was that these tires would be beefy enough to take it and that Land Rover knew what they were doing in their vast experience.
It was their off-road package.
It was their off-road package. Now, we got yelled at, you know, well, why didn't you put different tires and wheels on there? Well, you know what? Sorry, guys. We drive the vehicles as they come from the factory. Now, by the way, going back to this vehicle, these are street tires.
Yeah,
however, you could put on, there are packages out there, including from BF Goodrich and from Wrangler and all that, that are semi-off-road little mud terrains that you could stick on these cars.
You know, and that's a really good point you bring up. And we should talk about this, Nathan. Like when we do the Ike or the Tyke Ike, right? People always say, well, why don't you, like on the way down, why don't you manually shift it? So that, you know, you're holding the vehicle to the speed limit instead of letting the car, zip up to 65 and then do the brake application, the cutting brake application. And the reason for that, and it's the same reason that we don't swap tires out on these vehicles, is these are reviews and tests of the vehicle. If you think about it, if we're manually shifting that vehicle, then we're testing the driver.
Yeah, that's the driver who decides at a certain RPM to shift it down.
Yeah, it's a test of the driver.
And
it's,
some vehicles do have grade braking. They actually have the capacity to do that. Some SUVs do it. Even some crossovers have the ability to figure out that they're towing and that they should drop a gear on their own.
So if you wanted to buy that car and, you know, have Nathan drive it down the hill for you.
That's great. I come cheap. Yeah.
He does.
Go ahead and hire me.
Or with the tire situation, you know, if we swap tires out on it, then, you know, it's not what you guys are buying. It's not what the manufacturer actually spends a lot of time, energy, and talent figuring out what tires to put on the vehicle. Yeah. I mean, it's like figuring out, you know, what color to paint it or what engine to put in it. And so by us swapping it out, we're no longer then testing what the manufacturer is producing and what you're buying. We're testing our ability to pick the right tire.
Now,
once again, if people want to use you to pick their tire.
I'm happy to help you with tires, too. I come cheap. The one important point here is that we do some winter testing with some winter tires. We've done that before, but we're specific on those videos telling you, hey, this is what we're doing. We're testing the tire, not the car.
Yeah, Tommy and Alex did a great video last year.
Fantastic video, and they worked their butts off on it. Let me quickly go into the all-wheel drive system.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Yeah, what's the two-wheel drive and all-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm, that's right. So you get a front-wheel drive version, which, of course, is their base models. And then for X amount, which we'll discuss with the later video, you can get all-wheel drive. Now, this vehicle has almost an identical all-wheel drive system to the Toyota Camry all-wheel drive. Now, if you recall that vehicle, which we've had before, that had a 4-cylinder with an 8-speed auto and all-wheel drive. So this vehicle has a component from that. It has the all-wheel drive system. That means it splits torque 50-50 front to rear when needed. It's a fairly simple mechanical system, but in my experience with the Camry, it worked really well, and we drove it in snow, and we actually...
That's actually good news, because like the Prius has that really not great system where it has its own motor in the back, right? And it only, like, I think, provides like 7 horsepower to the rear wheels. I'm talking about the Prius all-wheel drive now.
Yeah, the Prius all-wheel drive.
It's a much different system.
Yeah, and that all-wheel drive system, the same idea may be coming in the... later version of this
hybrid,
car.
Which
yeah,
we don't know
the
yet.
Hybrid. But we don't know for sure yet. Once again, it's not confirmed. But this one has that system. So you have that, and then you have it mixed with your CVT. That means that doling out torque and everything else, it's based on the CVT as opposed to the 8-speed auto. By the way, you may be wondering, why didn't they put the 8-speed auto in here, right?
Why not?
Packaging. That's, you know, this is a much smaller vehicle than the Camry, so think about it that way.
You know, I don't know if this is true because I've never had anybody actually, you know, confirm this to me, but I'm starting to believe that the reason that these Japanese manufacturers just go instinctively with the CVT, and I'm, of course, not just talking about Toyota, but, of course, Subaru is the biggest proponent of that.
And so is Nissan.
So is Nissan, and so is Honda, just to a smaller extent. It's because it's cheaper. Why else?
Well, they put a lot of money developing these things now.
But there's no German brand, Nathan. And let's face it, Germans are not that Japanese aren't serious engineers, but Germans, you know, they test their vehicles on the Autobahn. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of one German car that's sold in America that has a CVT.
I can tell you that Germans actually were one of the ones who took CVTs first.
And then they went away from them.
Yes. So the very simple way of looking at a CVT, now I'm not going to go into a whole CVT diatribe, but what I like and what I hate, it's a very simple thing. The idea behind a CVT is quite good because there's fewer moving parts. Infinite amount of gears and very, very efficient. And if it was done correctly, could be something that's actually good for doling out power. Different automakers have a different way of looking at it. JATCO is one of the largest purveyors of CVTs, and they've had some failures. And that
is Nissan models. Yeah.
Nissan models, well documented.
Specifically, yeah.
Yeah, well documented. Actually, some of their smaller cars, too. But... the CVT that's used in this Toyota is different because it does have an actual gear, first gear. It's got a first gear. Then it goes into the CVT. And for many people, they believe that that solves a lot of the issues because you have that rubber band feeling otherwise. This one mitigates it. This is based on my experience with other vehicles that have had this transmission. But the other side of it is it absolutely takes the spirit out of the car. Even when you hook them up to turbos, which Nissan's done before and so have others, I feel that a continuously variable transmission is something just for efficiency for guys who don't care about performance.
It's weird, you know, because like snowmobiles, side-by-sides, all these great off-roaders are you know, all equipped with CVT.
Yeah, Polaris has them and everything.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the reason that it works like in a Polaris and it doesn't work, for me at least, in a car is because you're never at a constant steady throttle state in a Polaris, right? You're always like accelerating or slowing down because you're off-road, but you're never like on a highway going 1,000 miles from Denver to L.A. And that's when CVTs become really, really annoying.
I hate CVTs in traffic. Because in order to accelerate with a lot of CVTs to get the band going at the right RPM, you really have to go up to like 3,000-4,000 RPM just to get the thing to move right. And it seems like you're flying down the highway when you're only going 30 miles per
Andre
hour.
Andre and I took the Subaru Crosstrek up the Ike yesterday.
Oh, that must have been
Oh,
fun.
Yeah. You should have seen that little
screaming,
guy.
Screaming, huh?
2 liter, like, it was like one of those, when I was a kid, we had Cox. Remember Cox?
Oh, yeah.
Those little airplanes that
the ones that you would run around with.
They spin it around your head, right? It was just flying around on a string, and then they had this little tiny, it was just like that. It was like, you know, you'd start it up and it'd be like,
Yeah, super high pitch whine, and not a very pleasant one, I would imagine.
No,
either.
No, it wasn't.
But Subaru has managed to upgrade their CVTs over the years, and they've made them better and better. That is acknowledged.
They are getting better, but here, look, Toyota, if you put you're an eighth of the way there. If you put one gear in it, give me 7 more.
Yeah, there were some people who said, well, if you could do a first gear, maybe throw a second gear in there and then everything would be fine.
And the third and
the rest,
fourth.
Yeah, and then the rest. Or go back to a 4-speed, which, by the way, Toyota had one of the longest lasting front-wheel drive vehicles with 4-speed automatic transmissions. And when they got rid of the 4-speed and they started bringing out 6, 8, you know, all that, people were screaming, oh my God, the 4-speed was the best thing in the world. And it was. It was really good. It was really efficient, but it was also really slow. So if you look at the performance of that old 4-speed versus the new CVTs that they have, they're about the same.
You know what I don't get, though? Like, maybe we're just enthusiasts, and maybe we're getting a very small slice of the market, and maybe these companies do better market research than we do. They certainly do better market. But, you know, I think one of the things that we're good at, right, is kind of knowing what the zeitgeist is, you know, what the prevailing kind of thought is of the car buyers out there. Mm-hmm. And as far as I can tell, I've met very few people who actually like CVTs, you know.
And that's where we're different. I've met a lot, and that's why
really?
I've
changed my... Really? You've met people who like them,
yeah? Yeah, well, here's what happens.
I'm not talking about enthusiasts. I'm talking about your average general people.
We all represent different types of people, buyers at TFL. Roman, I like to say, is on the top half. That's why he drinks tea and has his pinky up. I'm near the bottom half because
we just bought a Civic Insight.
Yeah, the first gen
with 212,000 miles. That's not exactly...
Roman rolls his eyes as he walks past it every time.
A tea sipping. You should smell it.
I don't want to. I really don't want. So the thing, but what's important is that, you know, we have Tommy who represents, you know, the youth market. We have everybody. I think we've covered all the bases. I cover the bases of a lot of people on the bottom who, you know, are getting their first car or, you know, are doing limited means. And I see a lot of people saying, I love the fact this car gets great mileage. I really don't need high performance as long as it lasts. And that's what their bottom line usually is, as long as it lasts.
But they don't.
Well, they do with some brands. Toyota has had a really good record with their continuously variable transmissions.
So, you know, we did the series, and we're going to be publishing it hopefully next month. I'm talking about October for a few bucks less.
We bought
three vehicles for under $2,500 and then took them up and over Imogene Pass.
After we fixed them up a little bit.
And Tommy bought a Jeep Grand Cherokee. Uh-huh. I think it was a 91, I want to say.
No, I thought it was newer than that.
But anyway, it was, I think it was the second gen.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, I went with him to get it, and the guy who was like, hey, I've got some issues with my son, so I'm going to be late meeting you. I end up showing like 45 minutes late. And then when we're driving at home, of course, the check engine light comes on, and it turns out that, of course, what he had been doing is clearing that light.
Yeah, he went and flashed it himself. I've experienced that myself.
Yeah, and then, you know, that it turns out that check engine light was the same thing that happened with our Ram truck when we did to hell and back, where the transmission basically was shot.
Yeah, sorry about that.
So we had to take it in.
That's my fault.
And Tommy actually fixed it, but it was $2,500 to fix.
Yeah.
So a new transmission, basically. But that Jeep had 250,000 miles on it.
Yeah, and it was a really solid choice.
And it made 250,000 miles on one transmission. I don't know any CVT that's going to go 250,000
Now, there have been plenty of them, including some Nissan Jatcos. And I have had people sending me emails. I do this Ask Nathan thing every week. And people have sent me emails saying, I swear to God, it's the best transmission ever. If you treat them right and if you're lucky enough to not overheat them and not overextend them, yes, they can work quite well. Day-to-day drivers find that they're quite good and they're very similar to driving, you know, an electric vehicle to a certain degree. I have my issues, so does Roman, because it sucks away high performance. The other side of it is that it's not many of them, but some of them are reliable.
Well, it just makes driving not fun.
Mundane. I would say mundane.
It's like, you know, I might as well just drive a toaster with four wheels.
Yeah, but, you know, you're going there. I'm going with a person who doesn't really, who just needs an appliance to go back and forth to work, which millions of Americans
right.
do.
Right, and I'm with you.
They're fine with that.
I'm with you, but you can get the same vehicle from a different manufacturer with a regular transmission.
Well,
right?
that's what's important is that even Toyota's starting to acknowledge, you know, not many people really like CVTs, so we're putting them in Camrys, we're putting them in other vehicles.
Well, or here's a novel thought, get a manual.
Oh, God. Well, it's great for a theft deterrent nowadays.
Exactly.
And,
no one ever going
to
steal it.
And yeah, unfortunately, manuals are now, I think they just dropped from 3 to 2%.
I know, it's sad. It's
terrible.
It's just sad. And with electric vehicles, they're completely...
They're going to go bye-bye.
Bye-bye, yeah.
Yeah. But one final note on the Toyota Corolla Cross. It will be in dealerships in October. So shortly after you're hearing this, they will supposedly be there. Now, you may be asking, what about microchips? What about all the shortages? Well, some of those vehicles, this is according to Toyota, have already been equipped and are ready to go. But yes, they're going to be most likely affected
by
that.
So Toyota said that basically after that tsunami, right, earthquake in Japan, they actually stocked up on chips so that they wouldn't have this issue.
And they still have the issue.
But even they burned through their
chips. But they managed to go much further and much deeper into this whole issue than a lot of other automakers. Yeah. So only recently did they cut to 40%.
Announced 40% cut. Yeah.
But they still have enough inventory to satisfy most people. So this vehicle, it may be on dealership lots, and you may be able to actually get your hands on one. But I highly recommend watching both of our reviews. They're different. Oh, Roman, I forgot to tell you this. One of the reviews, I actually get to take it off-road a little bit.
Wahoo! I can't wait to see it.
Nobody else did that. I did.
Good for you. Yeah. In our other, we have two podcasts we do. We do this one that Andre does sometimes with you, talking trucks.
Yep.
And in that podcast, since Andre's out of town right now, I just interviewed the CEO of Ram.
Oh, far out.
I asked him, you know, about what, you know, is a chip situation. And he said, you know, we thought that we were going to be through this, you know, by now.
Yeah.
But he said there's no end in sight right now. He said it's still, you know, they're working hard, but there's no end in sight.
I predict January is when things are going to start easing up. That's my prediction.
I don't know. You know,
because they're building more plants to build the microchips.
I hope so. At some point, it's got to ease up because I just drove by the Jeep dealer, and they have a couple of Grand Cherokee Ls, and that's it.
That's it? Yeah. Yeah, I think they had one used. When I went by there, there was one used Gladiator, like, sitting on the side. That, you know, inventory, especially in places where, you know, we're not coastal, so inventory for us is hard to come by. And yeah, it's pretty bad. I'm curious to your thoughts also on inventory and how it's going in your state. So by all means,
let us know. The other thing I asked them about was, you know, are we going to go back to the days when, like, you know, our favorite dealership here is Johnson's Auto Plaza.
Yeah.
We buy all of our Jeeps and Rams from them, Chevy products as well. You know, at one time they would have 500 trucks on the lot. Mm-hmm. And he said they're not going to go back to that model. He said that they're going to be. Anyway, if you want to listen to that whole interview, it's over at Talking Trucks. Or just go to TFL-Studios and click on that link when it's up. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, I think we're in for, you know, some more rough seas. Prices are not coming down as far as I can tell.
No. It's one of the reasons I bought a used vehicle instead of either a newer used vehicle or a new vehicle.
And by the way, prices. If you want to know about Nathan's vehicle, we did a podcast. Just click on an older version of it. So, I don't want to go into that because we just spent, you know,
a lot of time on it.
A whole lot of talking about it. So, let's go to our next topic, and that is the most popular cars in America, which used to be, of course, mid-sized sedans like the Camry and the Accord, but now they are cars that are crossovers. So
these, more
the next
to the
size
point,
up.
The next size up, so, which would be the Toyota RAV4 and the Honda CR-V.
So I'm going to go down the list. I'm going to leave the RAV4 at the end because that's the most popular car.
Yeah, but it trades. Who knows what it is this month with everything that's going on?
Yeah, but usually there is like 400,000 units a year.
Even more.
Give or take. So let's start with the one that's just got announced. The newest announcement is that they just rolled out the newest version of the Forester, the Wilderness. You know, that's the, like, lifted off-roady one.
Right.
That has yellow indicators where recovery hooks should be. I don't know how else to.
Well, no, it's a unique color. It's
plates. They have little yellow plastic indicators where you would put the recovery hooks.
Recovery hooks?
No, they're little yellow tabs where the recovery hooks should go.
I didn't see that coming.
But
it might look cool.
Does look cool. Okay, but there are no recovery. It's just that's where
I'm sure it probably has the screw-in thing that you can use and all that. And that
it probably has an island.
Yeah.
Well, it has to have it if they're coming.
Does it have a better engine transmission setup?
You know, I just know they announced it today. I don't know. I don't think, no, there's no difference in the output. Zach told me it's got, I think, a little bit of a lift, so I want to say
I saw the picture. It looks lifted.
I want to say it's got, you know, instead of 7 inches, it might have more like 10 inches of ground clearance.
Yeah, so, and I mean,
more cladding.
And probably better tires, I would imagine. Although it could be those off-roady fake tires.
Could be the off-roady things. So what do you think of the Forester?
Generally, it's a perfectly good vehicle. I really wish they didn't put a CVT in it. I mentioned that before because I think off-road, it's better with an auto. But its packaging is really good, solid.
I would say I don't know because Subaru doesn't loan us cars.
Yeah, they don't. We have to buy them or borrow them.
You know why?
We can go into that if you want.
No, I don't know why. I'm just saying.
Why?
Because they don't value honest and independent reviews. That would be my guess.
Yeah, the bottom thing for me on this one is that they just didn't like what we had to say, which was not all positive about a vehicle, and they just decided to pull us out, which is funny because we are the biggest purveyors of videos for the Rocky Mountains, which is a place where there's tons of Subarus.
We've got the two biggest channels for truck. We got the biggest YouTube channel for truck and the biggest off-road channel except for Mike's Recovery. I can't compete with that.
Yeah, nobody can. But, you know, it's a shame. And
review channel.
We own our own Subarus for that reason. And every person at TFL has had a Subaru pretty much.
You know what's happening recently, which is a little worrisome? I think Polestar is certainly doing this. When they get a loan, when they give you a loan, they specifically make you sign an agreement saying that you won't, for instance, with the Polestar, range test it or compare it to another vehicle.
That's hard.
Yeah. 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 So we got to figure out what to do with that because, you know, at some point we value, I hope you value honesty and integrity. And how can we get a vehicle and then basically sign away a waiver saying that we won't like do the most important thing you can,
well,
do, which is a range test, right?
I wouldn't sign the waiver, Roman. If they're not going to give it to us to test it properly, then that's on them.
I'm kind of leaning toward like, hey, if you guys want us to review it, we'll do an honest and fair review. But if you're going to say we can't range test it, which is what everybody cares about, on an electric vehicle. By the way, the Polestar is kind of Volvo spin-off up. Market brand.
Which I think looks really cool.
They look
cool.
Incredible, yeah.
Yeah, they're awesome looking inside and out. And hopefully they'll come to their senses. You know what we can do? We can do an aerodynamic test. And in that aerodynamic test, oops, it ran out of range at this point. We don't know why.
Yeah.
You know, or something like we can label it something else.
Anyway, you know, we haven't had that issue yet because we haven't had a Polestar to review.
Yeah.
But other outlets have. So I'm seeing a lot more of that where the manufacturer is trying to kind of, in my world, dictate the terms of the review. So they'll say, we'll lend you a car, but under these conditions. And I think at that point, we'll just say, no thanks, we'll take a pass, and we'll figure out some other way to get it.
Yeah, that kind of bodes to what we were doing with Subaru to a certain degree. You know, we can only play the game the way you guys want it, which is as fair and as honest as we can be. And we're always honest about, you know, our own personal prejudice towards vehicles or powertrains.
I would think that, you know, part of our job, besides, of course, being, you know, honest and independent, is, you know, holding the manufacturers accountable to what they say they're doing.
Right.
Right? I mean, a manufacturer can say, this car has 5,000 miles of range on a single charge, and if then they lend it to you and they say, you can't run a range test, what is the purpose of the review?
I agree 100%, and I'm sure a lot of you guys do, too. Once again, in the comments, let us know what you think about that. So we were talking about the competitors in this class.
So let's keep going. The next one, and actually, this is one that Zach and Case just went and test drove the new version of it, or the updated one, the Tiguan. So we have had a lot of experience with
Tiguan. We've had a ton of Tiguans. They've thrown them at us.
Yeah. Tiguans, I think Zach recently said that they just sold over 100,000 units for the first time.
For Volkswagen, it's really good. Volkswagen has, they've been pushing SUVs, or crossovers, I should say, for a while, and they finally realized a few things. One, Americans are not thrilled with buying extraordinarily expensive Volkswagens, which is why certain ones have just not done well here.
Yeah, like the CC.
The CC wasn't too bad, but the Python.
Phaeton. The Phaeton. Yeah, that's a long time ago. The Arteon. That's another one that
it's not doing great.
And the Touareg also didn't.
The Touareg, which is an amazing vehicle, we've proven it, but at the same time, remarkably expensive and very expensive to maintain.
That's why they went to the Atlas.
Yes, they moved to the Atlas specifically for this market, and they managed to sell quite a few of those. Now that's why they have a Atlas Cross now. Which is basically one without the rear seats, which makes. And then this Touareg, or the Tiguan. The Tiguan is similar in terms of size and shape to, say, a RAV4, but they do provide a third row seat, which is one of the few vehicles that does it in the class. But on top of that, I think they're near class leading space.
Yeah, what they did was this is kind of interesting. I remember a long time ago, I don't know, like 8 years ago, I think, I went on the launch of the American Passat.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was when midsize sedans were ruling the roost.
Yeah.
And their claim to fame was the best legroom in the rear seat.
Yep.
And I think they copied that formula with the Tiguan.
Yep.
Because if you have the two-row one, and is there still a third row?
That's the thing. I'm not 100% sure.
I want to say they got rid of the third row.
You'll have to watch the video that was just put together and see.
Yeah, I want to say they got rid of it. I forget.
I went on and did a video, but
I did so many that sometimes I forget. But anyway, if you get the two-row one, you've got the most back seat room out of any
It is an impressive amount of room.
It's amazing back there, yeah.
Yeah.
And then much more room behind the row as well.
Yeah, so you have cargo space, and you have a 2-liter turbo engine and an actual automatic transmission and a decent all-wheel drive system. So all of that is imbued in this vehicle, yet it is definitely not competitive number-wise with the CR-V or the RAV4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep going. Now, this one's kind of, I think it's a little bit smaller. It's out of the class, or maybe it isn't, the Bronco Sport and the Escape.
Yeah. The Bronco Sport is actually in a smaller class.
Is it a smaller class? Yeah.
Yeah, the Bronco is more on the, I just tested it.
I felt so bad. Me and Tommy just took the Bronco and compared it to the
Forerunner
TRD Pro up in Magin. So that video is coming. But we were driving along the highway, and a Bronco Sport pulled up next to us, and I was looking down on the Bronco Sport. And
in more ways than one.
No, I was just
come on.
Because you're on 35s, right?
Yeah.
And that driver was just like looking up at me, like I felt bad. I was like, sorry,
you felt
dude.
Wrong. You felt like God.
I did not know. I was like, you could just see
you
it in his
your
eyes.
Puny little crossover. Look at me in my truck.
You could just and I think what Ford should have done, and far be it for me to, you know, tell Ford what to do, because of course that goes over really well.
Yeah,
but they probably should have done the Bronco first and then the Bronco Sport.
Well, yeah,
because
I agree
right
with
now,
you.
Right now, you kind of feel like you bought the Bronco, but then the real Bronco pulls up next to you, and you're like, "Oh my God, what the hell did I buy?"
With a cute little horn, beep beep, as opposed to this, bop, bop. Yeah, they're very different. They're not the only ones who have made this mistake. Do you remember when Nissan introduced their Titan XD?
First, before.
And it's like everybody's like, well, I don't know about that. And then they did the half-ton Titan, which is going to be their volume seller.
Yeah,
it should have been
XD
the other way around.
Was the Cummins.
Right.
The diesel. The
well, as an option.
But that, you know, we always scratch our head. Why not do the new Titan first and then roll out the
bean counters, or someone figured that out, because almost every PR guy's like, I don't know. And that's a similar thing, but Ford still sold the hell out of their Bronco Sport.
And they are, yeah, they're selling the hell out of them.
And perhaps they read the tea leaves and knew that the big Bronco would have some issues getting out of the factory and into consumers' hands.
So there was a person there that came up to us, and they were, and I think this is not just this person, this was in Ure, mm-hmm. right? They were completely confused. They were like, is this the Bronco or the Bronco Sport?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that.
There's a lot, I think
pulled that.
Yeah, people do not know the difference.
And I finally lost my stuff because, you know, it's just like, lady, you're married to a guy who's been in this industry for 2 decades. So I politely said, honey, if there's a tire hanging off the back and it looks really tall, then it's probably the big Bronco.
Yeah.
And I said it in a condescending, horrible way, and I slept on the couch.
Yeah,
I slept on the couch.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. So, but going back to the crossover, this class of crossover, the two top guys, CRV and RAV4.
Hold on, we're not there yet.
Oh, we're not there.
No, no, we're getting there.
What else are we missing?
We'll keep going. So anyway, my only comment on the Bronco Sport is it's probably the most off-road worthy in this class. So it's got the GOAT mode.
Without a doubt.
And we've taken it off-road. Forget the Escape version. Get the Bronco version. Bronco Sport version. Don't get the Escape. I think it's also cannibalizing sales because people like me are saying stuff like that of the Escape.
But it's cooler.
It's cooler, yeah. But anyway, yeah, if you want a really good off-roader out of all these, get the Bronco Sport. Now, the one that is the most popular vehicle in this brand's lineup is, of course, the CX-5. I'm talking about the Mazda.
Yeah, Mazda CX-5 is the most sporty of all of these if you get the turbo.
Most fun to drive on the
most
road.
Fun, even without the turbo, it handles fantastic. With the turbo, you have the excellent handling and a really stout engine. Not the most fuel efficient, but if you're buying it, you're most likely getting it because it looks cool and it goes fast.
And there's a new one coming, I believe.
Well, yeah. Mazda's updating their entire lineup, and we will get a new. They just recently introduced the CX-30, and it's doing very well for sales as well.
And speaking of new cars, another one that's very popular, and Nissan's most popular car, of course, is the new Rogue.
Right, and there's two different Rogues. There's the Rogue and the
Once
Rogue
again,
Sport.
Yeah, like Bronco and Bronco
yeah,
Sport.
But
there's a theme here, Nathan.
Yeah, there is. the Rogue... So the Rogue Sport and the Rogue, really, there's different sizes. The Rogue used to have a third row option. Now it doesn't. And they're simply, you know, different wheelbases. And I believe
beautiful interior.
Nissan's really stepped up their game with interiors.
Yeah.
But it does have a CVT. And some people, you know, ding it for that. But I thought that there was, and Tommy thought, that the Rogue was a very comfortable ride.
I agree. I think it's the value proposition out of all these.
Yeah.
And it certainly is one of the most comfortable.
And it was fairly fuel efficient, if I recall.
Yeah, yeah, in class. Like I say, I really think they've upped their game, like you said, in the interior.
Nissan's starting to hit it out of the park. They got some toys coming that are impressive.
Well, the Z, dude.
New Frontier?
The new Frontier.
I think I still think the Pathfinder is an excellent vehicle, too. So they're definitely moving up in the right direction, finally.
They haven't gone, once again, more off-roady. They should, but...
I think that with certain trucks, they're getting better. But that's the we'll go to a Nissan podcast in the near future.
Yeah, I'm going to do a series like, you know, and this is so like, oh my God, wrought with danger because it would be fun, but oh God, it would be dangerous. You know, how do we fix the brand, right?
We kind of played with this a little bit before and, you know, people threw firebombs. But I do think that there are certain things that certain automakers can do to fix themselves. Or perhaps things that they've been doing right. We can also talk about that.
Yeah.
But going back onto the Nissan Rogue, just to tie this whole thing together, the Nissan Rogue is a very good value proposition. And for those of you who are looking for a comfortable, luxurious ride for a good price, that is probably one of the best in class for that.
And then let's talk about the two most popular ones, which is the CR-V, the Honda, and of course the RAV4.
That's correct. Now, the CR-V and the RAV4 have something in common. They both come... They sell like hotcakes. Yeah. And they both have a variety of different versions, especially the RAV4. But both of them have your base model, they have an all-wheel drive model, and then both of them now have... hybrid versions.
Yeah, that's right.
Just last year, well, a little over a year ago, Honda introduced their hybrid version of their CR-V, and then the RAV4, of course, has their own version. And they're very different philosophies, but both of them deliver on quality, both of them deliver on drivability, and both of them deliver on popularity.
And utility.
They're both utilitarian. I would say that the Nissan actually has a little bit more cargo space, and so does the Tiguan, if I'm right. But in terms of overall usability, and also, you know, honestly, if you're buying either of these brands, you're buying into the whole hype about reliability. Both these vehicles are doing very well. Look, and highly rated.
Let's face it, a couple, maybe not more than a couple years ago, like Top Gear did this show where they took all these midsize crossovers and they towed like these campers with them, right?
That was many years ago.
Yeah, many years ago. And then the joke, running joke, was that they couldn't tell them apart. They kept getting into the wrong car.
Yeah, that is pretty funny.
And it is true.
I mean, I disagree with that. Back then it was true.
Look, it's gotten better. They're all a different flavor of donut.
Yes and no. I mean,
they're all donuts, styling wise. So for me, between the CR-V and the RAV4, I'm gonna say that the RAV4 is a little bit more attractive of a donut, but they're all kind of just
the off road version of the RAV4 has like extra cladding and stuff, and it looks a little bit more meaty.
Yeah,
they don't really have a off roady version of the CR-V. However, the CR-V actually has a fairly decent all wheel drive system. It works just fine. It's not amazing. Other vehicles in the class may have a more aggressive off-road system. So as we mentioned before, like the Bronco Sport, which sort of kind of competes, that vehicle is what you want to take off-road, or perhaps maybe the Jeep Cherokee. Is that in that same class?
Fair enough, yeah.
The Cherokee is really good off-road.
The darling of the RAV4 lineup, of course, is the one that the CR-V doesn't come, which is a Prime, right, which is a plug-in.
Oh, that Prime is a beast.
Yeah, Sophion just bought that.
Yeah.
From Redline Reviews. And that has, you know, a limited amount of all-electric range. But because it's got such a big battery, and I forget the kilowatt-hour battery size.
It's a pretty good size,
though. Maybe it's 20, something like that. Anyway, because of that, it's also the Rocket. It's the quickest of them all.
Like, was it 400 pound-feet of torque?
Yeah, it's quick.
And they let you use it, too.
Yeah. So I think that's the one that if you want kind of the sporty slash most innovative one, that's the one to get.
And out of all the ones that it competes against, I agree.
Also the most expensive.
Yes, thank you. So you get into this vehicle and you're in a $25,000 interior driving a nearly $50,000 crossover. And that's where we took an issue with.
But yeah, and if you're like an electric car fanatic, or you know, you're into that world, the charging rate isn't great. It's funny, people in the electric car world hate Toyota because they think the Toyota doesn't want to build electric cars, which may be true, right?
If you want to go to the political side of it, yes, to a certain degree, they don't want it to happen.
Right, they came out with their hybrid drive.
Hybrids are excellent.
Yeah, they think it's the solution, so why should we go and change everything around and compete against Tesla when we've got this great... Anyway, but that's the one I think I would get if I had the money. And if I wanted the most off-roady one, to get the Bronco Sport. If I wanted the roomiest one, I'd get the Tiguan. If I wanted kind of the most value one, I'd get the Rogue. If I wanted the most Honda one, and there's a lot to say about a Honda, right? There's something about Honda. They just build really honest vehicles.
I think that the handling on Hondas in general is usually better than most of the competitors. I like the way that the CR-V handles. In fact, I recommended the turbo version to a friend of mine, and he absolutely adores it.
I just think there's something like very honest about a Honda. It's not pretentious. It is what it is. It mm-hmm. does what it sets out to do.
And most of them are very reliable.
Yeah, and the Subaru, we don't know because I haven't driven one, so...
Yeah, so the old Subaru I drove I thought was decent. It was one of those vehicles that prevented you from screwing up even if you tried to screw up, and that perhaps is the one big selling point. I know a lot of you are like, oh, no, off-road, it's the best. No, it's really not, unless they do maybe perhaps something like this where they lift it and add things to it. We'll see.
I think the next Subaru we buy is not going to be the Wilderness. It's not going to be, you know, any of the new ones. I want to get that old Forester XT Turbo.
You should. And they did, if you second generation,
you
can find a manual.
If you can find a manual XT Turbo.
That thing will outperform. I guarantee you that will outperform almost everything.
The problem is they were all like chipped and, you know,
dropped. There's kids in my neighborhood who lower them.
I know.
Crying out loud.
Exactly. Yeah. They're like an Evo or like an STI.
We're going to have to go out of state to find one, I think.
Yeah. If you could find like a clean, unmolested one, that'd be the one. And they're not cheap. They're expensive. And right now, any used car is expensive. So
yeah. Tell me about it.
So anyway, it's been a rough few months in the auto world, especially if you're looking, you know, it's that real estate problem. Let's say that you're looking for a house and you've got a really nice house. Mm-hmm. You could sell your really nice house or car for a lot of money, but then you got to buy something for a lot of money.
That is so true. I've actually been dealing with something very similar to that. And yeah, if you can get, you know, let's say $1 million for one thing, yeah, that's awesome. But all of a sudden you have to pay $1.2 million to get something else. All of a sudden you're screwed. And it's the same thing in the car world. And I'm sorry to say that a lot of you guys are going to be paying huge premiums to buy either new or used cars.
Well, there you have it, guys. Thank you for spending, about an hour with Nathan and myself talking about the new Toyota and, of course, everything else that's going on at TFL. Once again, thank you to our Patreon members who are helping support this podcast.
Yeah, thanks. Without you guys, we couldn't do this.
Yep, and then thank you to all of you viewers. I don't want to, you know, leave you guys in the dust, because without you, we couldn't be doing it. And
right.
Remember, if you want to go to tfl-studios.com and see all these videos in one place and check out last week's podcast where you can figure out what vehicle Nathan bought.
Yeah,
and what
sorry
do you think
to do
of
that
it?
Too.
Did you fix it, by the way?
Not yet.
Is it stalling still?
Yeah, it still has a fuel injection issue, which we'll be taken care of in about 2 weeks.
There you go.
But it runs just fine.
That's what counts. All right, see you guys next time. Ciao.
Bye.
Thank you.